is one layer of visible units, corresponding to, say, the number of qubits you're interested in. A number of hidden units, which is a hyperparameter, so you can vary it between different attempts at training, say. It represents a joint probability distribution, joint between the visible and hidden, defined via this energy and the partition function, let's see, which is sum over both visible and hidden, e to the minus. We'll see that the partition function is largely responsible for the sort of intractability of training. I'm going to use lambda for the parameters of the machine. Remember the difference between parameters and hyperparameters? Parameters is what we're defining the optimization problem over. Hyperparameters are things like number of hidden units, learning rate in stochastic gradient descent, and all those other things. So what we're doing today is driving in detail the equations for training. So and the first thing is the cost function. Unlike when you have data with labels, you can't define a cost function that is the difference between expected labels and predicted labels or something like that. So we define a cost function through a measure of the distance between two distributions, big P, which is the distribution that underlies the data in principle, that's unknown, and P lambda, which is the distribution parameterized by the graphical model. So this is the target, unknown distribution, and this is the RBM distribution. You want a cost function that somehow quantifies the distance between these two distributions. And as you know, we can use what's called the Kullback-Leibler divergence. Defined just like this, right? So the idea is that the KL divergence is zero when the distributions are exactly the same. It's like you have a log of a one here, basically. And it's always a positive number, so you can define a gradient descent method that makes sense. So let me just write it like that. Right, so again, the goal is somehow, you're looking at, a distribution that's unknown, right, which is your big P. And you're imagining that somehow, those colors are pretty much the same, but you're imagining that your small p lambda is a distribution defined by the machine. And you want to use this cost function to basically adjust the parameters lambda, which are the weights and biases, so that these two distributions become overlapping. And so the KL divergence is the appropriate, or one appropriate cost function for that. Note also that it factors because of the log. into two. Uh-oh. Into two different terms, right? So the first term is just P log P, where P is the underlying distribution. That's just simply the entropy of the probability distribution, if you will. Oops. So this part here. Or if you approximate big P by probability distribution defined over the data set, then you can also call this the entropy of the data. And the important thing to notice is that that is independent of the parameters of the machine. So when you're defining a loss function or a cost function that you want to use for a gradient descent method to update the parameters of the machine, the only term that you have to consider is this. So it depends on lambda. So that's important. So it means that you don't have to calculate the entropy of the data set in principle for the training of a restricted Boltzmann machine. But if you throw away that first term and the KL divergence, then you will not be able to rigorously know when training is complete. Let me put it that way. Right? So if you have a full KL divergence, then you know when you're done training because you'll get zero when the two distributions overlap in principle. But what's happening here is if you throw this piece out, you're just getting sort of a relative convergence estimate. You know, you won't get a value of zero for any point of the training. And that's just life. Basically, I'll show you how we estimate this term in a tractable way in the training. But calculating the entropy of a data set is basically something that's always intractable given enough, say, qubits, right? So that's just life. In all of these cases, we're going to approximate this trace over these variables x or these configurations x with the data set that's given. So all you're given is the training data, right? You don't have any other sort of a priori information. As long as the training samples are drawn from P, big P, then you'll get the usual equations for estimators and so on. Okay, so for example, so if I define my data set as I did last class, it has a size, which I was calling big M before. I think I wrote this before. When XK is drawn from D, then the frequency distribution looks like this. And then DKL can be approximated by, let's just call that first term the entropy of the data set. Actually, it's minus, so. And then minus 1 over the estimator x in the data set. Right, I have x drawn from this distribution. Right, so then the resulting estimator based on the data is just log p lambda x. Okay, so it's a usual expression for an estimator. What we'll do is, again, drop HD and use the last term as our cost function. And what remains is equivalent to what Lauren talked about last week, which is maximum likelihood estimation. Okay, so Lauren motivated this. Previously, I'm just going, I guess, in a different direction. I'm just starting with KL, the Kullback-Leibler divergence, and basically motivating the fact that this term here is what we're going to use for the cost function. So there's a minus sign in front of it. I got to keep track of that. But let's use that to derive the expressions specific to the restricted Boltzmann machine. Okay, questions on this? Does this make sense? Okay, so what do we want to do? Let's define our cost, which depends on lambda, is that second term. Let's look for the RBM specifically. And I'm going to talk about visible units V instead of X. So let me sum over V in the data set. Log. Okay, so I've carried that minus sign down. Because when I do gradient descent, I want to make sure I'm going the right way. So lambda, however you write this, goes to lambda minus eta for a learning rate. I don't know if this is what you use, or some people use beta. Gradient with respect to whatever parameter in the neural network I'm updating. C, which depends on lambda. Okay, so that's the expression that we'll try to derive here. This is just the learning rate, so it's just a constant hyperparameter. So our task is now to calculate the gradient of what I'm calling C of lambda, the cost function. Okay, so the data set in principle is a set of V's, a whole bunch of visible configurations. Each one of these is a vector over big N, the number of qubits, right? And you have something I was calling, I think, big M, which is the size of the data set. Let's derive our training for the RBM by just pulling out one of these configurations, okay? So just one of these vectors in the training set, and let's plug it into the cost function and calculate the gradients and basically do our derivation like that. I'm going to drop the subscript and just call it V vector. So let's look at, so I'm going to lose track of things, but let's look at log of P lambda for that single training example. Okay, so remember our expression for the distribution way up on the board. This is the marginalized distribution. I'm going to drop lambdas in my partition function. I think that's fairly well understood. What do I want here? I want sum over h. So I marginalize out e to the minus e. And this energy depends on v and h. and the, of course the parameters, weights and biases. And I'm going to drop this explicit dependence on V and H vectors. Okay, so that's log of the marginalized distribution because I've traced out over H, right? And because I have a log with two terms, so it's log of this divided by this, it's the same as log of this plus, or sorry, minus log of Z. So this is log marginalized distribution, which is unnormalized. And then the piece with the normalization or the partition function, which unfortunately you can't ignore, just as a sum over both visibles and hiddens. Okay? So far nothing specific to the restriction on the Boltzmann machine, although we're going to get to that. This is just the expression for anything that has, you know, visible and a hidden layer. So the next thing to do is take our gradient. So our gradient is just take a partial derivative. We'll just do it symbolically with respect to lambda. Okay, and then we'll plug in whenever we need it the specific derivatives for either a weight W or one of the two biases B or C. So on partial log and I should keep track of the fact that this is marginalized, I guess. Right, log VH E minus E. So let's just take these derivatives of the log. So I got to keep track of my minus sign. So I'm going to have H E to the minus E. So chain rule, and then let's see, the derivative, the partial of E with respect to lambda, and I have a minus sign that comes from that. Okay, so that should be the first term. And the second term. And I have another minus sign here, so that's a plus. And I'm just getting lazy and dropping all the arrows. Cool? Okay, so we're still dealing with these two separate terms. What we see is that, okay, basically, we have something that looks like, you know, that. So you have a partition function here, right? You have a sum over probabilities, if you will, if you include that normalization. So that's just a trace over the joint probability distribution, right? And if you have data coming from V, the visible units, then that's just the usual expectation value of the gradient of the energy function. And this thing is easy to calculate. The first term can be simplified. So in principle, when you have the restricted Boltzmann machine, you know, its stationary state, well, so its instantaneous state is a representation of the joint distribution, right? It's not obvious what the representation of the marginalized distribution is necessarily. The machine is the joint distribution always. It's the Ising model that connects the two layers. But we can see that using an expression for the conditional probability distribution simplifies the first term. So P, I'll use H condition on V, which I can write as a joint distribution over P of V. And if I just write those two distributions out, the bottom one is the marginalized distribution where I've traced over H, right? And so partitions functions cancel, and I have e to the minus e over what? Trace H e to the minus e. And e always depends on both v and h. OK, so this tells me that my first term is basically a trace over H, and then this over this is the conditional probability distribution. So what is it? The gradient of log P lambda V is what I'm calculating. So that is sum over, I'll move this up in a second, minus there, so that's equal to minus H conditional plus joint distribution VH partial. Okay, like that. Okay, so this is the expression here that we're going to work with. Let me label it. Questions on that? So we can already see the structure of this, basically gradient of this log term. And the point is that if I have a data set of V vectors or configurations or projective measurements or whatever you want to call it, the first term is basically the expectation, the regular expectation value defined by this conditional distribution. Okay? But the second one is the distribution over the full joint model. And so what we can start to guess already is that this if written as an expectation value, has to be in the stationary distribution of the model for every single time you do you input a training step. So every, say, mini batch step or something like that. So this thing will quickly become intractable. But this first term here should actually be tractable because of the form of just expectation value over the input V, right? But it's a little strange to see it written in terms of a conditional probability distribution. So let's look at the, if you will, the complexity of each of these two terms separately. And the other point is that these gradient terms are just trivial for every single weight and bias, right? So all you have to do is look at, you know, for every training step, you have to look through every single parameter of the machine and calculate this gradient, right? But for every parameter, you know how to do it because the energy expression up there, you know, it's just a simple partial derivative. So we'll look at something like the weights. we'll come back to this, but so say I had, for example, a WIJ.
That would be something like minus, oops, VIHJ.
Okay, so those are no problem. What I do want to do is take a specific example and look at the tractability of those two terms. And so far, again, we haven't used the specific restricted structure of the RBM. So let's start using it now. So all the motivation for restricting the Boltzmann machine comes now. So as I drew way up on the upper left-hand board, and I'll draw it again here, I have some number of visible units. I have some number of hidden units. I don't know if I want to start labeling these things. Yes, I'm going to have to label these things with a subscript. So H1, H2. H, what did I go up to? M and N. Okay, so now one set of these is what I'm calling V. So I'm still working with one single training element, but within that vector is all the states of the visible unit and, you know, in principle all the states of the hidden. Right? And I'm abusing notation because up there, I'm using subscripts on the vectors. OK, so just keep those two things straight. So here I'm still a single training example. What I have in this expression is a conditional probability, right? And if I put, you know, my vectors back in, like that, then I have to calculate the conditional probability of, say, the hidden vector here, conditioned on the visible vector. And that's made simpler by the fact that the machine has no intra-layer connections. So they call this conditional independence, in the sense that, you know, so I'm conditioning on V. And I want to look at a configuration, the probability of a configuration in the hidden units. But say if I want to look at the conditional probability of H1 being either up or down, 1 or 0, plus or minus 1, it doesn't depend on any of the other H's. Right? It only depends on all of its weights, whatever, to the visible layer. So that conditional independence lets you factor the conditional probability P. P of HV. I'm going to use a confusing notation just for fun. So for each, say this, say I is 2. You know, for every hidden variable with that index, it's independent of all the other ones, H minus I.
Not exclamation mark.
Not a what?
Exclamation mark.
This?
Not I.
Minus 1. So I can't remember why I used that. But the point is that the conditional probability H, V, is just a product of conditional probabilities H, I, V. And vice versa for the conditional probability of V given H. So P, V, H, product of I, P, V, I, H. It also turns out that you can calculate these conditional probabilities, these individual conditional probabilities exactly, in the case of the restricted Boltzmann machine. So there's an analytical function that tells you exactly what that p is. And all you have to do is input essentially all of the visible units corresponding to that element of the training set. So PHI equals 1, right? There's only two. It's a binary unit, so it's either 1 or 0. And it's normalized, so you only have to calculate one of these. This turns out to be the sigmoid function. And VI equals 1H, so that's a single visible unit. Oh, I gotta get my indices right, this will be J. Well, I'm not gonna worry about it, because you're gonna fix this on your homework. So you'll derive these on your homework. And the only kind of interesting observation is you've encountered a sigmoid function before. So where a sigmoid function occurs in these stochastic neural networks, or these restricted Boltzmann machines, is in the firing rate of the binary neuron. So before this, the sigmoid was, you know, the nonlinear activation function of, say, a feed-forward neural network. Now it's interpreted as the rate of firing of this, say, extra hidden layer, or in the case where you're fixing the hidden layer and sampling conditionally the visible layer, it's the rate of firing of each one of the visible units. Okay, so that's a calculation you can do exactly. I want to go back and calculate basically the loss function using that expression in the box up there. One point that I've kind of been alluding to is that in the training example, because you know I have a set of v visible vectors, and for each one of those, I'm in principle calculating a gradient. And you know, where does the hidden variables come from? You essentially just sample them according to this conditional probability. So this is called Bloch-Gibbs sampling, and that's another consequence of the graph structure of the RBM. So what you can do is, which I'll explain in several steps, is sample a bunch of visible layers according to these conditional probabilities, clamp those or fix those, sample the hidden layer, fix those, go back to the visibles, and back and forth. So what we're forming is a Markov chain Monte Carlo procedure that has a different type of sampling. It's called Bloch-Gibbs sampling, and it has a different acceptance ratio than the Metropolis update that you've already studied. Allows Bloch-Gibbs. So basically how this looks is you have V. You use that conditional probability to generate an H. These are vectors. You use the H to generate a new V. You use this V to generate a new H. And so on. So your Markov chain looks a little different. In every sampling step here, V, H, V, H, I can essentially do a parallel sampling because of the conditional independence. So if I have 10 hidden units and I input V naught, say from the data set, then in principle I can do all those 10 hidden units updates in one step. So you can parallelize Bloch-Gibbs sampling. So the conditional probabilities let you do that. And the factoring is what makes it basically tractable. So let's go back to that log gradient. So back. Do this. And I'll show you more about block Gibbs sampling as we go on. Okay, so let me fix a weight. So let me use this expression here. I'm going to pick a weight out, wij, and I'm going to calculate the gradient of log of p lambda. And let's look at the first term. And what did I say? W equals wij. Okay. So what I need to do is look at that conditional probability. I'm going to use the fact that I can factor that conditional probability, and it'll simplify the trace. So I want So let's see. This is VIHJ, let's call it. And this conditional probability is what I want to factor. So now I'm going to use my crazy notation. I knew it was useful for something. PH given V. Let me pull out. So I have an H. I did this backwards in my notes. So I'm going to call VJ and HI. The weight matrix is symmetric, so it doesn't matter. But I don't want to lose track of my indices here. So now I have H vector V. So I'm going to pull out HI, which is the special one corresponding to the weight. And I'm going to write. Well, there's different ways to do this, but I'm just going to write this P as, you know, the vector of all other, there you go, perfect, all other units that aren't I. So all it means is that when I take this trace here, right, HI is special because I is the index that's keeping track of the fact that it's one of the weights that's connected to this unit, say, right? And there might be multiple ones because it's a matrix. Okay, that should work. So now this expression, let me separate those two traces out. HI V. That's a vector. That's a vector. HI VJ. So now the only trick, which is the best trick with restricted Boltz machines, is basically what is this trace over this conditional probability distribution? Okay, let me just pull that out. So I so vector I P. Right, there's no dependence of the parameter value on this part of the expression. And if you remember how a trace works, it's like a trace over an Ising system, right? So it's the product of you know, sums, which are of the values of that of each individual variable. Right, so for a given, you know, so the first term would be like, so it's p. So say you start with h1, I somewhere in the middle. You have a conditional probability that h1 is equal to 1. You have a conditional probability that h1 is equal to 0, right? And there's more of these. But because the conditional probabilities are normalized, right, then when you add those two things together, you just get unity. So you just have 1 times 1 times 1 times 1, n minus 1 times. So that vastly simplifies the trace, basically, for that individual or that single parameter that we pulled out of the machine. So that's the only trick. Then what's left over is sum over hi, e, hiv, hivj, right? And so there's only two terms in that sum, one for hi equals 0 and one for hi equals 1. P 0 conditioned on V. H I equals 1 conditioned on V times 1. So that's the values of H, 0 and 1. And everything is multiplied by VJ. So the only piece that survives is this one. And in principle, we know the expression for the conditional probability. That's what you're calculating in your homework. So VJ, like that. So for every single weight in the machine, that's the calculation of the gradient term in that box over there with the star. we still define a cost function that's we have to keep track of this, right? So we've done a single training example there, but the cost function is still over multiple training examples. So we additionally have a sum over all elements in the training set, or what typically happens is a sum over mini batch size, right? What about the second term? So the idea is that that's supposed to look like a tractable calculation, something in principle you can do in polynomial time. The trace is simplified quite a bit, right? So you don't have to take a trace over this exponentially large Hilbert space. What about the second term? So the point of the second term, which I mean, this one way over here, which is, you know, if you have a model defined by the restricted Bolson machine, this is essentially the estimator of this expectation value in the model. Okay, so that's as hard as any estimator to calculate. And you can see it. You can ask if this factoring trick, which happens right here, can help you on that second term. But the short answer is no. Right, this is a single training example. This is the joint distribution. This is the weights and biases. So that joint distribution here, in principle, you can write as a conditional, right? So if you did this, here's the joint. Which one do I want? It doesn't matter. There's two different ways to do it. It could be P of V conditioned on H given V, or P of H conditional V given H. So now you have a conditional distribution, right? So you can write VH, the joint distribution, where did that go? As a sum over V, say P of V, let's use the top one, sum over H, conditional, H given V, derivative. So now I have an expression here, right, that looks just like what I did up here. But the point is I have an additional trace over all possible visible units. So this inner sum, if you will, is simplified by the structure. But the outer trace is still exponentially large. Two to the m or n? I forget. I think it was small n states. Yeah, it's a number of v's. I forget how I labeled them. It's M? Oh, no, that. Yeah, there it is, M. Seems like I got them backwards. Whatever. Right, just the size of the Hilbert space. So that's the point, is that you should expect that second term to be intractable. So even though you've made a vast simplification by restricting the connections, the weights and biases, there's still a problem. And the bottom line is what you do is you basically just fudge that second term. Let me write the full expression for the cost function now over all elements of your training set, which is that thing I just erased, which is that set of all v vectors. So recall, I dropped a minus sign somewhere. I feel like in these notes and in my life. So I have a data set. I'm writing an estimator. V's taken from the data set. I have log. Sorry, P lambda, the RBM, V. What I did is I just calculated this term for one single element of the training set. Now I want to sum over all of them in principle. And what I want to form is the gradient. Which is simply this. Log P lambda V, right? That's this thing here in the box. And, well, minus looks right to me. HV. model. I'm just rewriting what I have in the box, but what I want to do is use the sum over elements of the data set, right, to write these. Each one of these terms is an estimator, right? So the way that looks would be C lambda. Okay, you have a minus sign. That term should be positive. Oh, I think I know where I dropped it. I think I dropped it here. Because my, right, my energy was minus, and I put plus in there.
Do you want to minimize the cost or optimize the cost?
I want to minimize, all right, I'm just going to write what I think it should be. And we'll fix the minus sign. So the point is there's two terms and they compete, right? So the first term is like an expectation value of the derivative over that conditional probability distribution. And the second term is, oops, the expectation value over the joint distribution. That's the intractable one. Right, but what I want to do is, let's see, update my lambda with minus, right? So what we should be doing is increasing the weight for this term here. So whenever I have whenever I have an element in my data set, which is a VIHI for the weight, say, right, then I want to increase the weight. You know, I want to increase the WIJ. And whenever my model produces or generates a configuration that's, say, for a weight VIHI, then I want to decrease. So that's the concept of a positive and negative phase here. So I can figure out the right signs from that. But so the point is that if I consider this an expectation value over the data, and this is an expectation value over, you know, say weights and biases or whatever produced by the model, I'm balancing these two terms, right? So if I'm producing, say, a weight configuration or a bias configuration, you know, a visible or hidden unit according to the model at the same frequency that it's occurring in the data, then my gradient's zero. So then your training is perfect, right? And if otherwise, you're either increasing or decreasing the value of the weight or bias. So I'll let you guys figure that minus sign out. But I can write it down. So let's just say if I was taking a derivative of the cost function with respect to a weight, then from what I have over here, it should be something like VIHJ. I'm going to call it data minus VIHJ in the joint distribution. And these two terms compete. So according to this thing, my weight, this is for a weight, so the weight increases according to its frequency in the data set, right? And you should be subtracting off the negative phase, which is decreases when there's a high probability of that configuration being generated. The point is that this shows you why you're not just calculating the expectation value, or you know, approximating. Let me put it this way: the probability distribution by the histogram of the data, right? So you're learning. Yes, you're learning basically how to update weights and biases according to the data in the positive phase. That's what this is called. But you're also balancing this with a negative phase, which is kind of like unlearning. So you're unlearning specific instances that occur in the data based on how the model, right, this is the model, generates configurations. That's the negative phase. So that's the philosophy of the Boltzmann machine and how you change the model according to visible and hidden units. So the only thing that I just want to end with is how do we calculate that negative phase? So anyway, based on this intuition, we can fix our signs there. But I think I just dragged a minus sign through when I shouldn't have. How to calculate the second term, so let me call it the negative phase. So what you have is a machine with a certain amount of training elements, or in, you know, in the training set, and you have at any moment a set of weights and biases, and you also have the possibility for any given set of weights and biases to calculate any expectation value of that joint distribution, and that's what that is, right? So it's just the and it's just an expectation value in the same way that you would, you know, sample configurations from a two-dimensionalizing model using a Boltzmann distribution in a Metropolis Monte Carlo. You can sample visible and hidden configurations using Bloch-Gibbs sampling, which I mentioned over there, for the joint distribution of that restricted Boltzmann machine, and you can calculate that estimator. Right? So VIHJ, whatever, you know, P of VH, you know, can be calculated by, you know, 1 over number of Monte Carlo steps, sum of VIHJ, you know, sum over all configurations, whatever I want to call them, joint configurations generated by the machine. So let me just put it VH generated by the machine, or something like that. Just a regular estimator, right? By the RBM. What you would have to do for every single element of your training set and for every single parameter in the machine is to run that Monte Carlo procedure basically to get good statistics. So you would have to equilibrate. You would have to, you know, collect statistics for a whole bunch of these Monte Carlo steps, and that would give you the estimator. So the fudging way to do it is to just calculate this estimator for like one step. You know. With one MC step. Or let me say K, where K is like, you know, K is approximately equal to order one. And that's called contrastive divergence. Okay, so I'm not going to talk about contrastive divergence. I mentioned in the notes online that Lauren's provided for you. But so basically, contrastive divergence is just this very approximate, you know, kind of messy algorithm that is used to train these machines and to give you a sort of tractable estimate for that negative phase. So that was it. We got through all the training in one class. That's pretty good. So now that we know how to train a restricted Boltzmann machine, tomorrow what we're going to look at is how to sample physical estimators from trained machines. But we're gonna talk more about the training and block Gibbs sampling and stuff like that. But I wanna work towards the idea that we can use Boltzmann machines as ways to reconstruct not just classical probability distributions, but also quantum wave functions and even density matrices and things like that. So what will be, we only have one more class, so I'll just be sketching it out kind of, as a broad overview. But we'll be talking about how we adapt this type of Kobach-Leibler divergence, maximum likelihood estimation with things like contrastive divergence into cases where you have complex phases and so on in the wave function. And I'll show you guys some data from that. Okay, so look at the notes to fill in any blanks. Track out my minus signs. When's the homework come out?
Tomorrow.
So homework will be calculating the sigmoid function and also looking a little bit more closely at block Gibbs sampling and the acceptance ratio for updates in the block Gibbs sampling. Any questions? Well, so it's a conditional. So you have a single hidden unit that can either be up or down. It can't be anything else. So the probability of it being up and plus the probability of it being down has to be equal 1. So now the trace is a product of these ones. So it's just the fact that we've normalized the conditional probability distribution. You'll need this on your assignment. So it's good to understand it. And all it is the trace. And I know you write these sums like this all the time, and you kind of forget what the trace is. But it's just the same as the trace as you do in statistical mechanics. It's exactly the same thing. So all the tricks of the restricted Boltzmann machine are essentially factoring that trace. So you'll get some practice with it. Any other questions? Okay, see you guys tomorrow. We'll look at some real data then.